Glove is in the air, Northeast Ohio.
Soleil, like down Euclid.
Shoulder, hammer down.
Cleveland, this is for you.
What up, King James Gossip listeners? This is Nathan Beatley, the site expert of King James Gospel, and I'm joined by contributors Jared and Kyle Hesketh. How are you guys doing?
What's good?
Doing good.
All right, and then our guest this evening will be Dan Galinsky, another contributor for King James Gospel. How are you doing, Dan?
Outstanding.
All right. Well, we're like usual, we're going to go over our last couple games from this past week. We copped a three-point win over Chicago, which is the far less important game than the Christmas Day showdown where we had a seven-point loss to Golden State. How do you guys feel about that game?
Without mentioning the refs being complete trash, won't say it, but I said it anyways, I think we played okay against the Warriors. I mean, we were both down some pretty important pieces. Obviously, Steph was out, IT was out, Derrick Rose was out, and Amon Shumpert was out. We shot horrible from two, just completely terrible. We shot amazing from three, and we held the Warriors shooting, 27% from three. So we held them from shooting really, really well from three, which is their bread and butter. Defense looked great on both sides. Kevin Durant showed up and played amazing. My man's Kevin Love proved that he still is my man's Kevin Love.
And for every listener, if you don't know, Kyle was in love with Kevin Love.
No pun intended.
It's an understatement.
Damn, he stole my thunder.
LeBron seemed like he played a little too passive in this game, honestly. And he didn't shoot too well, but like I said, no one else did. Our bench really, really underperformed. Only person that showed up to play was Dwayne Wade, and he didn't even shoot that well either.
But hey, give the plug to Jay Crowder.
Jay Crowder showed up and played an amazing game.
And Jay Crowder has never done that well as a Cav in his life, probably.
Yep. True, he shot 50% from the field, 60% from three. He played pretty great defense. And I was impressed, even though we lost on some two poor calls from the refs. It's okay. It's not nothing like I didn't expect much from this game because, like I said, we still have three pieces out and Steph was out. What really pissed me off about this game was the defensive effort from J.R. Smith on Klay Thompson. He seemed to get lost all the time. And what really impressed me actually defensively, even though Kyle Korver only shot one of three from the field, was his defense on Klay Thompson. I think it's because they both play similar. So they both know when to jump screens on each other. So I think that might be something for Tyronn Lue to look into on having Kyle Korver on Klay Thompson most of the games, if not all the time, whenever he's in.
Okay, I don't have too much to say that hasn't been said about the games. But my thing I wanted to insert was I don't really like how the NBA does that two-minute report and then just says the officials were wrong, but you can't go back and do anything.
It doesn't help anybody.
Yeah, I think
it just makes the fans more mad because we already knew that there were fouls.
I think it was the only thing I've ever heard that I've agreed with from Draymond because he basically said that. He's like, there's no point to it.
Right.
And I agree with that. And LeBron kind of hit that too. He said there's no point. Like, why are we using replay? If there's a foul, why are we using replay on top of that? Like, you're replaying the possession, but you're not replaying the foul.
Right. Do you guys hear, it wasn't that game, well, that game too, but Jeff Van Gundy, I can't remember specifically what game it was. I think it was the Philly game with that long, like, overtime game. I think it was, like, a foul where Andre Robertson was fouled under the basket.
Oh, he was hacked.
And it looked like he was stuffed, but they showed the replay, and it was clearly hit in the head. And he basically was saying, and that was a crucial point because he missed that layup and it looked like a Robertson or Roberson, whatever the hell his name is, like botched layup. You know, he doesn't like to shoot the ball, kind of like DeAndre Liggins type.
Yeah.
And it looked worse than it was because he was clearly hacked. And I mean, Andre Robertson free throws are obviously a crapshoot, but it's, I mean, if there's a clear foul called, I think in the last, maybe not, obviously we're not arguing like balls and strikes, fouls, whatever kind of thing, but I think in the last 2 minutes, maybe not of each half, maybe just the second half, they should be able to obviously take that into consideration. Cause like Nate said, with what Draymond said is like, what are they going to do about it anyway? It's just,
but then
it's
at
just
the same point,
doubling down on saying you're wrong.
At the same time, I actually heard something. I'm not sure if it was from an ESPN analyst or somebody else, but it basically said that in the NBA, in the modern day NBA, players are so good that with every drive, you can see a hand check. You can see touching the wrist, the arm. You can see a foul on every drive. So then you're going to call a lot more fouls. You're going to slow the game down. I'm not sure fans are going to like that as much, but it's accurate. So do you go with that?
Well, I think like Dan said, if it's like last 2 minutes of the game, then why not review it? Like,
but then
I think they review like charging fouls and blocking fouls, do they not?
But then it's the same with like the possessions too. Why do you want to just get the last 2 minutes right? It's the whole game that's important.
That's true, but
yeah.
I think if LeBron drove, like say second quarter, and that was a play, they definitely would have called the foul. I think because of the heat of the moment and the stage of the game, like where it was at, fourth quarter, last minute, I don't think the refs wanted to decide the game. So I think they swallowed their whistle and they didn't want to call a foul. So you could say that as well.
I do remember what you're talking about, Dan. Jeff Van Gundy also said it during the Warriors-Cavs game. He also said that exact same thing. If we're allowed to like review possession of ball like out of bounds or whatever, they should be able to review fouls as well. And I completely agree with that. And I think they only review calls within the last 2 minutes of each half. I think you're right.
Yeah,
about
I
that.
Think that's what it was about, like the OB kind of issue. Yeah.
Yeah. But they should be able to do it with fouls as well. I completely agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, there are still some things to work on. And as like the game itself, it was definitely when you shoot, what, 38% from the field or something, you can't expect to win.
31%.
31.
Over,
can't expect to win.
Yep.
Right.
And so it was partially on us, but it definitely was a lot of it was all of us was on us. Like, you can't blame the refs. You can't blame the last 2 minutes.
Not.
Exactly. Right. Kevin Love, Kyle, he was the best player on the floor. That's for sure. He was the best player on the floor for both teams, I think.
Right. And even though we out-rebounded them by 10, the last few minutes of the game, those offensive rebounds absolutely just killed us.
That's part of Lou's problem as well. He doesn't.
Right.
He doesn't
it is
love,
part
like,
of Lou's
he doesn't
problem.
Love,
right.
Having Love on the floor in the last couple of
years. Yeah, and at the same time, you're totally right on that. But also, we had zero blocks in the game. Like, I'm sorry, like, that's inexcusable. You can't block a shot at all. And you give up 32 fast break points, which was the biggest issue in the finals. Like, our fast break defense is solid in general, but for whatever reason, against the Warriors, we give up so many layups. I mean, Jordan Bell getting dunks, like lobs. That is
pretty
all
sure
that guy
he had
is
at
gonna
least.
Do.
He had at least like six dunks. I swear.
Yeah,
it I mean, felt like it at least.
Well, they were at like crucial points in the game, and those kind of sort of are just telltale signs in the game. I mean, he has 8 points, but he's a plus three and six huge rebounds. That's tough.
Yeah, there's a lot more to discuss about that game, but we're going to go ahead and move on to our two hot topics. And our second one is a bit more about the game. We'll get into that later. But our first one is the Toronto Raptors, who have silently been one of the best teams in the NBA. Obviously, we all know they're in the Eastern Conference. So does anybody think they pose any type of threat to the Cavaliers or the Celtics as the top seed?
I'll go first. I don't think they pose a threat to the Cavs, but possibly the Celtics. The Raptors, they're one of those teams that they don't make a lot of noise, but they're consistently solid throughout the regular season. third defense, and they have a top 10 defense, but they don't have anyone that can guard LeBron. I don't see them. I mean, I just
especially since PJ Tucker left.
Yeah, I don't think they're a threat. I mean, they're a good basketball team. Don't get me wrong, but they're nothing we should be worried about.
Well, I wanted to bring it up because ESPN, when they released their latest power rankings, ranked them over Boston, but just under us at number three. They ranked them number four. So it's kind of interesting to see, even though the one thing I was looking up about them is they're extremely deep. 10 guys with over 5 points per game. That's a lot.
I think the addition of CJ Miles was actually like really, really good for them. I like CJ Miles a lot. And Kyle Lowry, he isn't scoring that much. Well, 16 points a game, but he's filling the other stats categories. He has 6 rebounds and 7 assists, so he's having a pretty solid season. And then DeRozan, he's 24 points. You know, he's always going to be a scorer. And Ibaka, 14 points, 6 rebounds. I mean, they're solid all around, but nothing we should be worried about, I don't think.
Right. It's just, I mean, Toronto is obviously like not doing the typical ISO ball since they always lead the teams like in isolation percentage and like fewest passes per game the last 2 seasons. But I mean, I'll give you credit, like, or give them credit in that. And obviously Ananobi has been kind of a revelation. He was, I would say, definitely was a steal. And I don't think people really saw that in Indiana. And he's really good in the open floor, and they're playing a little bit faster, but, in the playoffs, we know the writing's on the wall in Toronto. I mean, they've never won a game one at home. Like, it just seems like it's so much harder for them in the playoffs. They can't just get out and run. And are they a team? Like, it seems like they'll have problems whoever they're playing. They're not going to like sweep anybody. And they played. Yeah. It seemed like last year they got. I mean, they beat the Bucks in 6, but they got annihilated in 2 of those games and had to sweep by at home second game because Lowry hit some big shots. But, I mean, we know that what happens with Lowry in the playoffs. He just can't find a way to get that monkey off his back. And I don't think they have enough that you can trust them. And are we really considering them better than Boston? Personally, I don't think so, but – as you said, I can't remember who said it, they have nobody that can actually guard LeBron man for man. And in the playoffs, he's just a different monster. So I don't think
yeah. So. The Raptors tend to struggle in the playoffs. I mean, if you want to ask the question if they're a threat for the 2 seed, 1 seed in the East, I mean, you could make a case, but not for anything in the playoffs, no.
All right. And I wanted to add in, they do not have a marquee win at all. Lost to Golden State, lost to San Antonio, lost to Boston. So that also adds in, but I just wanted to clear that up. Kyle, do you have any take on the topic?
I mean, it's all kind of the same. I really don't see them as that big of a threat. Come playoff time, not really. I mean, DeMar DeRozan is always doing his thing, and he surprisingly added a 3-point shot, so that could be something to look at. Lowry's numbers are down. Like Dan and Jared said, it's no more ISO ball, so it's kind of cool that they're actually getting more of their players involved. CJ Miles was a big pickup, but they have a lot of young talent, and from what we've seen in recent history, or just in history in general, young players don't do well in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. All right, so I just wanted to get that quick hot topic out of the way. Our second hot topic is definitely interesting. It relates to our Christmas Day game. We had 2 people that make over $10 million a year, obviously struggle. Tristan Thompson, 2 points, 0 for 4, and J.R. Smith, 0 for 5 from the field, 0 for 4 from 3. If they're unplayable against Golden State, how do we gauge their value moving into the trade deadline?
I'll start off with this one. Last podcast, I remember I pointed out that I wanted to see 3 people. I was interested to see 3 people play against the Warriors, and it was Kevin Love, Jay Crowder, and J.R. Smith. And obviously Kevin Love did his thing, Jay Crowder did his thing, but J.R. Smith really, really disappointed me. It seems almost that he fails to, I don't even know, I don't know the word, but he doesn't play well against the Warriors. And like you said, the question, okay, so J.R. Smith This is kind of confusing. I said his inconsistency makes him very hard to trade. He can be a key piece for the Cavs when he's on. When he's on offensively and he's on defensively, he is a very important piece for the Cavs. But when he is off and his confidence is down and he doesn't play defense, he's almost unplayable. So I think J.R. Smith in general would be very hard to trade. But Double T, on the other hand, he's not doing anything for me. He's making over $16 million a year to grab around six rebounds a game. Last year in the finals, he was out-rebounded by Steph Curry. So I think with his salary and
the fact that he still has two or three more years.
Right. I think with his contract, I think he could be dealt somewhere else, and I'd be perfectly fine with it, to be honest with you.
See, the one thing I also wanted to kind of add in is, do you think that trading J.R. Smith, if you're going to say that, do you think that trading Smith, if you can find a partner, would be smart? Well, because isn't J.R. Smith and LeBron James close?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It depends who we get for him. That's like his inconsistency makes him very hard to trade, which is.
But you also can't really bench him. I feel like he's almost got too much pride to get benched.
Yeah, I mean, if worst comes to worst, Lou could start Korver, move JR to the bench, but I don't see that happening or working out. So it's kind of, I don't know. JR is in a very weird spot, I'd say.
In all honesty, I never had any value for Double T in my mind. He was never that great of a player in my eyes. I mean, he had a few good moments in the finals a couple years ago, and he played pretty well. But in my eyes, he's a very overrated defender, and he's one of those rebounders that it's all about hustle, and it's nothing's technical. So sometimes he will get out rebounded by better and more technical rebounders. And with JR, I love JR Smith, don't get me wrong, but because of his inconsistency and how he defended on Christmas Day, like the fact that Kyle Korver defended Klay Thompson better than JR Smith did, and Kyle Korver's not as athletic as he is kind of telling. So,
and Smith ended with 31 minutes compared to Korver's 21.
Right. But in terms of their trade value, because of how much they're making and how bad they've played in J.R. Smith's case and in Double T's case, how little he's played this year, they just don't hold a lot of trade value for other teams. And there's not a lot of want for other people unless you're just trying to dump a player. So maybe when it gets closer to the trade deadline, you can package those two for and another, maybe the pick or another player like Shumpert or Fry. We might be able to get them off our books, but not like, I don't know. They just make a lot of money. That's not appealing for other teams.
So do you think that's a rule of thumb for the Cavs now? If you're not effective against Golden State? Because J.R. Smith has had good games.
Right.
Tristan Thompson has had good games before. Maybe not necessarily against Golden State, but
2016 finals, both of them like were key pieces to us winning. But last year in the finals, I mean, J.R. went off in game, five?
And that's when the Cavs were
He had good games in 3, 4, and 5.
But that's when the Cavs were literally taking shots away from Kevin Love and trying to get him shots in the first quarter because he wasn't doing anything else. Like, you had to literally try to get him open for shots.
Yeah, it's just hard to you guys hit the nail on the head when they're making the trade value kind of dries up and considering that they're not on, like, expiring deals or anything, nobody's going to be able to kind of – you can't just dump them. And JR is too – he's kind of, like, too old where he doesn't really fit timetables.
Yeah, he's in his 30s already.
He's in his 30s, and J.R. Smith, it's just like he doesn't even – he's just got such a rudimentary handle, and it seemed like earlier in his career when he was kind of that bench six-man sort of like spark plug on like Denver, I could just picture when he's dunking over people in New York and that sort of thing. Like confidence is such like a thing with J.R. Smith, and yeah. And another thing is, I think what Jared said with Tristan Thompson, Exactly. He's not really, like, people say he's a rim protector. He's really not a rim protector. And people finish over him in the restricted area. People don't, like, not attack the paint because Tristan Thompson's there. Like, that's not the case. I mean, Mozgov was a lot better defender and rim protector. And he was actually kind of an underrated piece in that 2016 run. And J.R. Smith, going back to him, like, the defense is – Simon Hannig wrote about it an article today that was published that – or I think it was yesterday, actually, that he should be traded. But when he's not – it seems like his defense is predicated on just defending spot-up players and catch-and-shoot players. And he doesn't – like, he seems like he's regressed defensively. It seems like he's all – he uses his hands too much. And he's not – he doesn't, like, get over on the pick and roll. And he gets caught in pin downs. He got caught in a lot of pin downs yesterday, or on Christmas Day, rather. And it's just – you don't see consistent – I don't know if it's effort. There's just mental lapses with him. And if Tristan Thompson's not getting you double rebounds and frankly, like a hot, really high clip – then his value is almost meaningless, but he's younger, so his trade value might be a little bit more than Smith, but the guy can't make a shot really outside the restricted area. So how are you going to actually realistically trade these guys? It's hard to say.
Yeah, it would be easier to trade Double T over J.R. Smith, but I don't even know if I would want to trade J.R. Smith, you know what I mean? Like, he can be that important to the Cavs, but sometimes he can be almost invisible on the court. That's what makes it hard.
But that's right. Kind of the point is, especially against Golden State, it seems like Smith is put into the grinder and he cannot play at times.
Yeah.
And are you going to have Lou just continually give a guy 30 minutes where he can't really produce? Or would you rather just rid yourself of that situation in general? Obviously, I don't think Smith gets traded. There's no one's begging for Smith.
Can I ask one thing, Nathan? That's a good point you just made, but would you say, like, Shump is playable with Golden State? I personally would.
I feel like
he's sort of the same.
I would, well, personally, I would rather have Crowder on the court at all times over either of them.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree.
And it's because Shumpert's very inconsistent offensively. Same with Smith. And Crowder, while he's not very consistent either, he makes smart decisions. I was looking up today. 92% of Crowder's shots are either open or wide open. That's under 75% for Shumpert and Smith. Crowder doesn't turn the ball over. He doesn't shoot just five threes a game. He can actually attack the hole if he wants to. He rebounds. There's just so many things he does that almost makes him the better option than Shumpert. And in the finals, there's only going to be 7-8 rotational players.
A good amount of spots.
So, and especially you're going to have to see if Derrick Rose comes back. I would rather have Kyle Korver on the court than either of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And
but that's the point where you got to get to.
Korver has completely maximized, like, every inch of his – like
his ability, being
of his
that man,
being
that
yeah,
man cannot get go. Better he yeah, does not have the athleticism to get better, and he cannot shoot better.
Shooting cannot get better.
The thing is, if you look at athleticism, he is probably the worst defender on our roster other than Isaiah Thomas, just because of his height. I mean, he can't really do much, but Korver gets, like, defending spot ups, and he just puts so much effort in, and he makes so many little, like, deflections, and he's honestly a pretty solid rebounder.
Fundamentally, he's a great defender.
He never has mental lapses, and that's invaluable against a team as good as Golden State, and even in Boston as well. And he always seems to carve up Toronto. I'm not sure exactly why, but he just finds a way to just maximize his talent. And I mean, he's leading us in plus minus by a considerable margin, really.
Yeah.
So.
Let me add one more thing. For game, if you like, when you watched JR offensively, his defense is like, it's nothing. He's like not even there. And Korver, he didn't have a very good game. He only scored one basket. But he consistently played very good defense on Klay Thompson. So it doesn't seem like...
One basket is still more than JR's none.
That's true.
All right. Well, those are two hot topics for the week. Anybody have anything else to add to there?
Nope.
I think I hit it on.
All right. We're going to move on real quick, though. We're going to play... we're going to introduce a new game this time. We're going to play a game called What Are the Odds? You've probably heard of it. We're going to play... give me your odds, 50%, whatever you're feeling. What are the odds Cleveland makes a trade before the deadline? Which it's kind of interesting this year because they don't really need any role players. Right. So it's almost a superstar or no trade. So what are your odds?
I don't know. That's tough. I'll say...
Like 1-3, 1-2.
I don't know. I don't see us making a trade. At all. I mean, I think we'll have enough pressure on us to get IT back into the lineup and flowing and all that. I think that would just put too much pressure on the Cavs. I don't see us making a trade.
Not even. So you're saying trade deadline sometime in February?
February 8th, I believe.
You're saying February 7th if LA calls up the phone and says, we'll give you Jordan for your first and Thompson.
If LA calls, then yeah, but
that's what you gotta think. LA could call because DeAndre's not staying.
But DeAndre Jordan, you don't really have to get him into like you don't have to incorporate him that much because he's an alley-oop guy and he's a rebounder and a shot blocker and all that stuff. He doesn't need shots. Like if you want to go for a Paul George, that would be tough.
Exactly. But personally, if I had to gauge like. If we're playing a game like what are the odds or something like that, I'm going like 1-3 because I really think that I think that over the last two seasons we've made a trade and I think that we will make a trade of some type, whether it be for just a role player. I think DeAndre Jordan's on the move. I don't think Paul George is on the move, but I don't think Cousins is on the move, but Jordan will end up somewhere else.
I'll give and 50, players, 50%. You're right. 50%.
1-2.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, what are you thinking?
I don't think we'll go around calling for a trade, but I think if the right trade comes our way, so like you said, if DeAndre Jordan maybe comes knocking on our door, then we could. So I'm with Jared, probably about 1-2, 50%.
That's not bad. It's probably what I would think, maybe even a bit less, because I'm not sure we would give the best value for Jordan or really any superstar. Honestly, I feel like Boston could give anybody else a much better array of future assets.
Well, the way it's looking, LA isn't looking too hot anyways. They might decide to blow everything up. So if the Cavs make a trade, I could see DeAndre Jordan being the guy.
All right, Dan, what do you think about it?
DJ is definitely he's the thing is we give up the most threes per game and our paint defense is pretty terrible too. And he at least helps with like one of those areas, I would think. I mean, offensively, at least he gets you boards and he's at least efficient. But I mean, yeah, that seems to be like if there's a star, that's pretty much the tell all be all at this point. Yeah. But I just don't know if we really have the assets for that. And honestly, I could say maybe us trying to get like a lower tier, maybe like a Dwayne Dedman. He seems to be kind of flying around in some trade rumors here and there as Atlanta's eventually going to try to blow things up a little if they can with like Bellinelli. But I'd say maybe even less, 1-3, maybe like around a 35%, gentlemen's 35%, give or take. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I don't see us really trying to get a PG or anybody. Nobody wants to have to deal with like the OKC predicament, and with LeBron, he's more of a team guy. And not that Russell Westbrook isn't, and I don't know about Melo honestly on that one, but I don't see like anybody other than like a rim protector. Role man type guy. That's really the only guy is DJ, I would think. I don't see us really trying to jump in like the Anthony Davis boogie sweepstakes. I feel like that ship sailed.
Agreed.
All right, so with that, we're going to go to a next segment or a next little game that's fairly common. We did it last week. It's Would You Rather. So would you rather trade for a capable shooting guard or a capable shot blocking center?
Well, we kind of went over that just then. Okay, so at this point in the season, we're almost at the All-Star break. We're almost at the trade deadline. The way the Cavs are constructed and how everything's going, we have to bring back Isaiah Thomas. We have to bring back Derrick Rose. We have to bring back Shumpert. All those minutes and all the, all that stuff. I think it'd be really tough to bring in another guard per se. So I think, that's one of the reasons I think we should trade for a shot blocker instead of a guard. But then again, we'd have to move Kevin Love to the four. So a trade would make things complicated, but if I had to choose between one of them, it'd be a shot blocking center.
But I think I'd have to go with the shooting guard because of how poorly Jay Har's been playing at the shooting guard. I do understand what you're saying, but if we get a shooting guard that's just a spot up shooter that can also play D, I don't even know if there's one out there right now outside of Klay Thompson, maybe. But that's just how I feel. I do understand what you guys are saying about a shot blocking center.
I just think if you try to get in, like, bringing in a shot blocking center just seems like the logical way to go.
Right.
And you wouldn't have to blow it up as much, so to speak. And I mean, you never know. JR could have, like, he's like fire in a bottle. Eventually he can light up like here and there. And sometimes he can defend really well if he's feeling like it and our blitzing schemes work. Which it seems like they're really like a crapshoot whether that works. And I don't know if Colby Altman is going to want to deal away as much to get like a Paul George or somebody like that. And knowing he'd have to give up, like there'd be like no backup plan sort of thing. So, and I don't think really like getting one guard, obviously with IT coming back and D-Rose maybe playing, I don't know with him. But, the center, like, it at least alleviates some of the paint defense issues. I mean, if you just look at it here, the Cavs are 21st in paint defense, and the Clippers are 5th. So DeAndre Jordan, honestly, like, adds, at least deters, like, a Kevin Durant drive or forces away, like, altering shots from not letting, like, Bell just get 4 dunks in a game. Like those plays, even though they're only 2 points, they are momentum swingers, and the Cavs just always seem to give up those easy buckets against the Golden State. And like Brad Stevens might be able to take advantage of some of our paint defense issues, that sort of thing. And I don't think I don't really see any guards on the market that are two-way players. I mean, Jordan Clarkson, I don't think they're going to make a deal with us because of our kind of lack of assets, and there's just teams more equipped. So I would probably go with the shot blocking center if possible.
Agreed.
See, it's not that I'm 100% against that. It's just that I'm not 100% for that. I think it all depends on the value. All depends on what we can get for what we have. Because there are shooting guards that I wouldn't mind getting a hold of. I wouldn't mind getting Fournier.
I wouldn't mind JJ Redick.
Well, that's I don't think happening. We get Redick. JJ likes his home in Philadelphia for sure.
I don't think he wants to leave there long
term. I'm just saying that would be amazing having Redick and Korver on the court at the same time. Oh, my God. That's my
favorite. What I'm actually saying is that I feel like Fournier could hop in that first unit and it gives them another threat, another volume score, because Smith may make a couple tough shots a night, but when was the last time he really hit 20 points back to back? Like Smith is so inconsistent that I almost don't want to play him.
Yeah.
Right.
What about we try to get this guy? We tried to get this guy in the offseason. What about Jonathan Simmons?
I thought he signed. Did he only sign a 1-year deal? I thought he signed a 3-year deal.
I don't know what he signed.
I don't think we get him because I think the Magic think that they got to deal with him.
That's
I don't think they're going to deal with $6 million contract that Simmons has, I think.
I don't know what it is, but that was just a random.
Well, it's kind of like us. It's kind of like us dealing Crowder. We're never going to deal Crowder because he's only making $6 million a year, and that's amazing.
Yeah.
See, but with that's a good point with Simmons, but offensively, Simmons is like another Jeff Green. Like it's he'll occasionally make an open three, but Jeff Green, honestly, I'm a big Jeff. I think he should be starting here and there because of the size ability, but like Jonathan Simmons is literally all transition. That's the only thing he does. So
and he's much, a and he's really a product of the system.
Do we want to play up tempo with Golden State? No, we want to walk the ball down the floor. So he's kind of like neutralized against Golden State in a way.
Well,
like,
if you're Tyronn Lue, you want to push the pace as fast as you can. You know,
which yeah, yeah.
I mean, Jeff Green, that'd be interesting if he, you know, slid into the starting lineup at the three, Crowder at the two, or even at the two. I mean, we got a lot of versatile players. That'd be interesting.
All right, so that's pretty much what we got as far as content for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. We're going to do our 21 Shump Street pick of the weeks now. As you know, last week, as long as the Cavaliers beat the Kings, I was the only one that got them all right. Jared and Kyle both predicted a Warriors loss on Christmas Day, and I said that the Warriors would win. So there's that. So I'm going in 3-0, hopefully. And we have three games this week. We have away December 30th against Utah. We have home January 2nd versus Portland. And then we have a back-to-back January 3rd against Boston away. How do you guys view that playing out?
I say we beat Utah, we lose to Portland, and we destroy Boston.
All right. Kyle?
I say we beat Utah, we lose to Portland, and then we lose to Boston because LeBron doesn't play.
Oh, my God.
He has to play. It's ESPN.
Oh, yeah.
It's a mandated game.
Right knee soreness.
All right, LeBron. You heard it here first. Right knee soreness, LeBron, January 3rd.
Oh, man.
All right. I think I'm going win all across the board. All right. Dan, you won't be here next week probably, but what are you guessing?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll go. I'm actually going to say we lose to Utah. I hate that matchup, honestly. They have like a weird – they have like that really small jammed-in arena. It feels like it's like a college arena. I feel like you're playing at Butler in there. So I'm going to say that's a loss, and I think we'll destroy Portland. I just feel like we can bully them a little bit. LeBron will probably bounce back. And
it seems like he's been playing every game. Like every game, all 48 minutes. Like he doesn't.
He's playing like a grueling kind of style too. Even though he's not getting the line as much, like which is BS. But he's getting a little bit physically beaten up. Yeah, or I guess he's beating up other people, whatever. But
he needs to take some rest.
Yeah. And I'll say we narrowly beat Boston because I feel like Kyrie will be on a mission. He'll get like 40, but it won't matter.
So this
I'll say 2-1. Sorry.
So 2-1. Yep. So none of us picked the same order. So we got to see how that works out for next week.
Hold on. I'm going to change.
That's interesting. No, it's already submitted. Already submitted. You can't change it. You can't change it. You can't change it. Already submitted. Already changed it.
Why? What did you want to change it to? Win-win-win or win-win-win-loss?
Win-win-loss. Yeah, win-win-loss. Just because I said LeBron's not going to play, so he's obviously going to – we're going to win that game against Portland.
I'm cool with it. All right, and that's all we got here for King James Gossip. That's our second episode, and we hope you come back Thursday morning next week as we'll probably be premiering another episode. Thank you.